Chapter 86. Maria Carolina, not have I heard, my child, but these vile tricks, to pluck you from your nuptial plighted, and your rightful glory make me belch oaths. You shall not join your husband, do they assert? My God, I know one thing, outlawed or no, I'd not my sheets forthwith, were I but you, and steal to him in disguise, let come what would come. Marriage is for life. Marie Louise, mostly, not always. Not with Josephine, and, maybe, not with me. But, that apart, I could do nothing so outrageous. Too many things, dear grand dame, you forget. A puppet I, by force inflexible, was bid to wed Napoleon at a nod, the man acclaimed to me from cradle days as the incarnate of all evil things, the Antichrist himself. I kissed the cup, gulped down the inevitable, and married him, but nonetheless I saw myself there the lamb whose innocent flesh was dressed to grace the altar of dynastic ritual. Hence Elba flung no duty call to me, neither does Paris now. Maria Carolina, I do perceive they have worked on you to much effect already. Go, join your count, he waits you, dear. Well, well, the way the wind blows needs no cock to tell. Exeunt severally Queen Maria Carolina and Marie Louise with Nieberg. The sun sets over the gardens and the scene fades. Scene V, London. The old House of Commons, the interior of the chamber, appears as in Scene 3. Act I, Part I, except that the windows are not open, and the trees without are not yet green. Among the members discovered in their places are, of ministers and their supporters, Lord Castlereagh the Foreign Secretary, Van Sitter Chancellor of the Exchequer, Bathurst, Palmerston the War Secretary, Rose, Ponsonby, Arbuthnot, Lushington, Garrow the Attorney General, Shepherd, Long, Plunkett, Banks, and among those of the opposition Sir Francis Burdett, Whitbread, Tierney, Abercrombie, Dundas, Brand, Duncannon, Lambton, Heathcote, Sir Samuel Romilly, G. Walpole, Ridley, Osborne, and Horner. Much interest in the debate is apparent, and the galleries are full. Lord Castlereagh rises. Castlereagh, at never a moment in my stressed career, amid no memory-moving urgencies, have I, sir, felt so gravely set on me the sudden, vast responsibility that I feel now. Few things conceivable could more momentous to the future be than what may spring from counsel here tonight on means to meet the plot unparalleled in full fierce play elsewhere. Sir, this being so, and seeing how the events of these last days menace the toil of 20 anxious years, and peril all that period's patient aim, no auguring mind can doubt that deeds with root and steadiest purpose only, will effect deliverance from a world calamity as dark as any in the vaults of time. Now, what we notice front and foremost is that this convulsion speaks not, pictures not the heart of France. It comes of artifice from the unique and sinister influence of a smart army gamester upon men who have shared his own excitements, spoils, and crimes. This man, who calls himself most impiously the Emperor of France by grace of God, has, in the scale of human character, dropped down so low that he has set at naught all pledges, stipulations, guarantees, and stepped upon the only pedestal on which he cares to stand his lawless will. Indeed, it is a fact scarce credible that so mysteriously in his own breast did this adventurer lock the scheme he planned, that his companion Bertrand, chief in trust, was unapprised thereof until the hour in which the order to embark was given. I think the house will readily discern that the wise, wary trackway to be trod by our own country in the crisis reached, must lie twixt two alternatives, of war in concert with the continental powers, or of an armed and cautionary course sufficing for the present phase of things. Whatever differences of view prevail on the so serious and impending question whether in point of prudent reckoning we'd better let the power set up exist, or promptly at the outset deal with it still, to all eyes it is imperative that some mode of safeguardance be devised. And if I cannot range before the house, at this stage, all the reakings of the case, I will, if needful, on some future day poise these nice matters on their merits here. Meanwhile, I have to move. But an address unto His Royal Highness be humbly offered for His gracious message, and to assure Him that His faithful commons are fully roused to the dark hazardries to which the life and equanimity of Europe are exposed by deeds in France, and contravention of the plighted pacts at Paris in the course of yesteryear. That, in a cause of such wide-waked concern, it doth afford us real relief, to know that concert with His Majesty's allies is being effected with no loss of time, such concert as will thoroughly provide for Europe's full and long security. Cheers. That we, with zeal, will speed such help to Him so, to augment His force by sea and land as shall empower Him to set afoot swift measures meet for its accomplishing. Cheers. But it seems to me almost impossible, weighing the language of the noble lord, to catch its counsel, whether peace of war. Here. If I translate his words, to signify the high expediency of watch and ward, that we may not be taken unawares, I own concurrence. But if he propose to plunge this realm into a sea of blood, to reinstate the Bourbon line in France, I should but poorly do my duty here did I not lift my voice protestingly against so ruinous an enterprise. Sir, I am old enough to call to mind the first fierce frenzies for the selfsame end, the fruit of which was to endow this man, the object of your apprehension now, with such a might as could not be withstood by all of banded Europe, till he roamed and wrecked it wantonly on Russian plains. Shall, then, another score of scorching years distract this land to make a Bourbon king? Wrongly has Bonaparte's late course been called a rude incursion on the soil of France. Whoever knew a soul and single man invade a nation 30 million strong, and gain in some few days full sovereignty against the nation's will? The truth is this. The nation longed for him, and has obtained him. I have beheld the agonies of war through many a weary season, seen enough to make me hold that scarcely any goal is worth the reaching by so red a road. No man can doubt that this Napoleon stands as Emperor of France by Frenchmen's wills. Let the French settle, then, their own affairs. I say we shall have naught to apprehend. Much as I might advance in proof of this, I'll dwell not thereon now. I am satisfied to give the general reasons which, in brief, balk my concurrence in the address proposed. Cheers. Ponsonby, my words will be but few, for the address constrains me to support it as it stands. So far from being the primary step to war, its sense and substance is, in my regard, to leave the house, to guidance by events on the grave question of hostilities. The statements of the noble lord, I hold, have not been candidly interpreted, by grafting onto them a headstrong will, as does the honorable baronet, to rob the French of Buonaparte's rule, and force them back to Bourbon monarchism. That our free land, at this abnormal time, should put her in a pose of wariness, no unwarped mind can doubt. Must war revive, let it be quickly waged, and quickly to reach its effective end. Though 'tis my hope, my ardent hope, that peace may be preserved. Whitbread, were it that I could think, as does my friend, that ambiguity of sentiment informed the utterance of the noble lord, as oft does ambiguity of word, I might with satisfied and sure resolve vote straight for the address. But I am well the flimsy web there woven to entrap the credence of my honorable friends. I must with all my energy contest the wisdom of a new and hot crusade for fixing who shall fill the throne of France. Already are the seeds of mischief sown. The declaration at Vienna, signed against Napoleon, is, in my regard, abhorrent, and our country's character defaced by our subscription to its terms. If words have any meaning, it incites to sheer assassination. It proclaims that any meeting Bonaparte may slay him, and, whatso language the Allies now hold, in that outburst, at least, was war declared. The noble lord tonight would second it, would seem to urge, that we full arm, then wait for just as long, no longer, than would serve the preparations of the other powers, and then pounce down on France. Castlery, no, not so. Whitbread, good God, then, what are we to understand? However, this denial is a gain, and my misapprehension owes its birth entirely to that mystery of phrase which taints all rhetoric of the noble lord. Well, what is urged for new aggression now? To vamp up, and replace the Bourbon line. The wittiest man who ever sat here, 21, said that half our nation's debt had been incurred in efforts to suppress the Bourbon power, the other half in efforts to restore it. Laughter, and I must deprecate a further plunge for end so futile. Why, since ministers craved peace with Bonaparte at Chatillon, should they refuse him peace and quiet now? This brief amendment, therefore, I submit to limit ministers' aggressiveness and make self-safety all their chartering. We at the same time earnestly implore that the Prince Regent graciously induce strenuous endeavors in the cause of peace, so long as it be done consistently with the due honor of the English crown. Cheers. Castlery, the arguments of members opposite posit conditions which experience proves, but figments of a dream, that honesty, truth, and good faith in this same Bonaparte may be assumed, and can be acted on. This of one who is allowed to violate bonds the most sacred, treaties the most grave. It follows, not that since this realm was one to treat with Bonaparte at Chatillon, it can treat now. And as for assassination, the sentiments outspoken here tonight are much more like to urge to desperate deeds against the persons of our good allies than are, against Napoleon, statements signed by the Vienna plenipotentiaries. We are, in fine, too fully warranted. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.